is Casey Must. I'm the owner and founder of Citizen Yoga, and you are listening to After Class. After Class is our podcast where we bring on mental health professionals, students, teachers, anybody that's furthering our mission to improve the mental health of the overall community and spread the message around suicide prevention and overall the topic of suicide. If you at all have been listening, you know that I've taken a little bit of a break because I myself had a baby. And as we come back into the podcast, some of our guests, of course, are going to help clarify maybe some of the questions that I myself have in my postpartum recovery and hopefully some questions that maybe you have. So I thought it was really fitting in my first podcast back from maternity leave that I speak with somebody. Her name is Annie Phillips. And Annie is a therapist. She's certified in perinatal mental health, and she really works to understand and assist families who struggle with fertility issues, difficult pregnancies, perinatal mood disorders, and just general postpartum struggles. She really works to individualize and work with a holistic approach with each client so that I know that I feel like this all postpartum advice and pregnancy advice feels so generalized and, oh, well, this is how you're going to experience it. This is what you're going to experience. And the truth is that what I've learned is we're all so different, and feeling unheard is really difficult and can feel really isolating. So I'm so, so grateful that Annie decided to come on our podcast. Annie, welcome. We're so happy to have you.
Hi, Casey, and thank you for having me.
Oh, my goodness. So Annie, can you just talk about why, or at least tell our audience why you specifically stepped into mental health as it relates to like the perinatal field, the postpartum field, and what was your journey getting there?
Yeah, so my background is I got my MSW from the University of Michigan, go blue, and during
so that means you're coming to yoga at the big house, right?
Yeah, I actually saw that you're doing that and I was interested.
Okay.
That was awesome. But so during that time, I at U of M, I interned at Children's Hospital in pediatric oncology, and I did a lot of palliative care work and dealt with a lot of grief, death, and dying. And
that's so hard.
Yeah. And then after I worked at a couple different places and then ended up back at Children's Hospital working again in the pediatric hematology oncology clinic. And I was working with all basically new parents and parents across all age ranges going through the most difficult time in their life. You know, their child gets diagnosed with cancer or rare genetic disorder. And oftentimes it was right after birth, and while I provided support to them while in the hospital and the outpatient clinic, there was such a lack of support outside of the hospital environment and lack of follow-up care to identify, you know, perinatal mood disorders. And I didn't really click, and I never really realized that until I became pregnant for the first time while I was working there. And my first pregnancy actually ended in a pregnancy loss, and which was very difficult because it was my first pregnancy. And, you know, I mean, any pregnancy loss is difficult. You know, you're so excited. And I became pregnant with my second pregnancy shortly after that. And it was a high-risk pregnancy. And she was born a little bit early. But, you know, our social structures in this country aren't set up for medically fragile babies or babies with health conditions or babies being born early. And so I did return back to work 10 weeks postpartum. And I had a very difficult transition, and I felt so lost because I was supposed to be the person you know, helping families through the most difficult time in their lives. And I was struggling right. significantly. And I didn't even realize it at the time that I was suffering severely from postpartum anxiety. And I had had a lot of risk factors, and the fact right. that I had a loss before my pregnancy, and I never had time to grieve that loss. And then I also had a high risk pregnancy as well, which caused a lot of anxiety during my pregnancy. And so it was during that time that I really started to focus on the mental health of moms and dads too, before and after pregnancy, because how is me as a mental health professional, if I didn't have the tools to access to cope with all of this, how do people who don't work in the field have the tools? And so I then got certified through Postpartum Support International and Perinatal Mental Health. They have a wonderful program for clinicians to get certified. It's a pretty intensive program, and which is good. And then eventually I opened my own private practice. I left Children's Hospital and opened my own private practice with my partner, Priya.
You know, it's interesting because going through pregnancy, going through my own experience of postpartum, one of the whole mission of Citizen was really that I saw that our society, it was not just Michigan or anything, our society has not been set up for real community building in a space where people are taught how to engage and socialize. And so that became Citizen's mission. And then now going through a new transition phase, it's sort of a similar reflection that you had, which is society hasn't really set up for family support in a way that makes it, I don't even think it's acceptable. I think you don't even know what a family support could truly look like, which would be, you know, mental health for mom and dad, mental health potentially for babies. And so it's interesting that you say, like, I don't even know where to turn and who to ask, you know, for help outside of being in a hospital, because it does sort of feel like that, okay, I'm at home by myself. The only thing that people do is Google or look on blogs, and who's to say that any of these people are real experts?
Yeah. And while there are so many wonderful and great social media pages and information on the internet about perinatal mental health, there's also a lot of misinformation as well. Yeah. And it's really, I mean, I can sort that out because of my background, but a lot of people can't. And so it's hard to find the correct resources in the world wide web where right. there's so much information out there.
Yeah.
And kind of like you said about our society and its failed women, like women, it is amazing how far women have come in the workforce. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. look at you, you've built your own business. Women, I think over 50% of physicians now are female.
Right.
But women have, you know, significantly caught up to men in the workforce, except our social structures have not caught up with that.
Correct. Yeah. It's there's such a pull. I'm feeling it pretty intensely because I'm 13 weeks postpartum now, and I love my job. Like, I love working. I love teaching. You know, when you say, like, you went back to work full time 10 weeks postpartum, like, that to me is so difficult. And I don't even think we realize how much pressure is put on not just women, but families and men too. You know, my husband went back to work. He's an entrepreneur. He had to go back to work 3 days after she was born, or 4 days after she was born. And that was really lonely and hard. And, you know, so there are these pieces that are much bigger than just, which, you know, diagnosis and knowing that there are these issues, which hopefully will start to, when you and I first spoke on our first call for a project that we're working on, you outlined something I had never heard of, which we'll start to get into right now. But I think that there is a bigger question about what do we need in society to help the transition into parenthood, not just motherhood, parenthood, because it's getting a bad rap because society isn't set up for it. But the experience of actually becoming a parent is extremely profound. It's just, you don't want to do it alone. So the same way I thought Citizen could help people from a community perspective, we can work on different projects and help people like you, you know, get into the public so that people know where to ask for help and how to ask for help.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'm so excited you invited me to talk today. Yeah. Just getting the word out that there is help out there. There are supports. And you should not feel afraid to ask for them,
right,
and that you're not a bad parent if you have to reach out. It actually makes you a better parent.
Yeah. So what are you, PMADS?
What does that stand for? So that stands for perinatal mood and anxiety disorders.
Okay.
So PMADS. And so I think we spoke about, there's several, but I think we spoke about how we are going to focus today on postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression, which are the most common ones.
Mm-hmm. But I never heard of postpartum anxiety, maybe obviously because, you know, you don't hear about things until you're in those things.
Yeah.
we often hear about postpartum depression. But there are two things I just want to clarify. There's the baby blues. I definitely went through the baby blues because having Penelope was like such a high, oh my God, like the greatest moment. And then I remember I called my friend and I asked her, I'm like, wait, is this postpartum depression? She's like, oh no, there's a stage called baby blues. So can we differentiate baby blues versus postpartum depression?
Yeah, definitely. So baby blues usually occurs in the first, 6 weeks. And it's, if you're still feeling those symptoms after that, then that's when you need to seek help. But baby blues is definitely just a hormone fluctuation. You just went through this crazy outer body experience giving birth. You're bringing a baby home. Your life has completely changed. You're really tearful. They say that 80% of women experience the baby blues, but it's probably 100% of women. People don't report it. It's like, if you think about it, your body just goes through this incredible change and you're learning how to breastfeed. You're figuring out,
so many things. I remember Adam and I were sitting at dinner and I was crying. And he's like, okay, what's going on? I was like, I don't know. I'm not sad. I'm just hysterically sobbing every dinner for like the first 2 weeks, but not out of being sad. I was just like, I have no control over the amount of feelings I'm having in this moment.
Yeah. And so the baby blues always begins during the first week postpartum. And it should be gone by 3 weeks postpartum. It sometimes lasts a little bit longer for some people.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you get around to, I would say if you're still feeling like that around the 4 to 6 week mark, then that's when it's kind of a sign. It's if you're crying every night at the dinner table like you, it would be good to seek some help or seek some clarification from a professional.
Right. So then how would you as a person going through postpartum, what are some markers or indicators that we should be looking for in regards to postpartum depression?
Well, so with postpartum depression, it is very much linked to rapid hormonal changes. And that's what I always like to reiterate because a lot of women will get postpartum depression and think that there's something like fundamentally wrong with them and they're a bad parent.
Right.
And I'm like, no, your body just went through a crazy experience and your hormones are all over the place. And also fatigue and sleep deprivation.
Right.
Sometimes postpartum depression can be treated with just sleep.
Right.
The sleep deprivation is huge. But some of the symptoms that you're talking about are what you're saying is, you know, crying at the dinner, you know, excessively crying, not knowing why, excessive worry or fear. A huge one is irritability or short temper, which that can be really off-putting to people, women or men, because men can have postpartum depression as well. That can be really off-putting to somebody who usually is a pretty stable mood. There can be a lack of attachment to the baby, loss of interest in pleasurable activities, discomfort around the baby, feeling overtouched, even sleep problems.
For the mother?
Sleep problems for the mother, even like when your baby's sleeping, that you still cannot fall asleep.
Right.
Also a huge one is feelings of hopelessness and guilt, feeling like a bad parent because you're having these feelings. Those are usually the most common symptoms that I see.
It's it's very complicated to identify, you know, is this, I like that you sort of say it's not about being a bad parent. It's about hormone changes that are occurring. And it's sort of similar to how you presented postpartum anxiety. So postpartum anxiety, I had never heard of, and I was definitely, I remember, I think it was 3 days after I brought Penelope home, my best friend who she helped, she was with me when I delivered Penelope, and she was with me and my husband, and she gave me a water bottle, and it was a plastic water bottle. I think I had told you this story. It was a plastic water bottle, and her daughter Uma, who I helped deliver, put all these like happy stickers on this water bottle. And you know, Mary said to me, for all the times that you have really sort of irrational thoughts about dropping something on her or falling down the stairs or whatever irrational thought you might have about her being injured, you'll look at this water bottle when you're nursing and will remind you that there are so many good things. You know, there were stickers like, you know, sunshine stickers on it. And at first I was like, what is she talking about? Like, I'll be fine. And then over, you know, the next week or so, you know, my mind was like imagining all these things that could happen to her. And and I remembered back to Mary and I's conversation. And then when we spoke, you sort of put it into, you know, a term that was really helpful to know that, again, I'm not an outlier. And this is a very natural instinct that's occurring. And there are reasons as to why it's occurring. So maybe you can talk to us a little bit about this, what is termed postpartum anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. And I can tell you a little, I mean, I had a very similar experience that you have with Penelope, with my first child, that I had these shameful and what I thought were shameful, intrusive thoughts. Like I would be walking down the stairs at my house and picture myself throwing the baby down the stairs. And we had a fireplace, and I would be, one of my favorite things was to rock her by the fire, and I would picture myself throwing the baby in the fire. I remember a long time ago, before I ever had children, a woman told me that, you know, sometimes when the garbage truck would come, she would picture, you know, throwing her baby in front of the garbage truck. And I was like, oh my gosh, is there something wrong with this person?
Right.
And then after experiencing postpartum anxiety and not telling anyone because I was so ashamed, I thought that there was something wrong with me, that I was a bad mother, but I fundamentally knew I would never do these things to my baby. And that's the difference between postpartum anxiety and postpartum psychosis. But that is a whole another topic
conversation
that deserves a whole another episode in itself, which is it's very uncommon too. But but I believe that so many more women than reported experience postpartum anxiety. And once I learned why we have postpartum anxiety, it was so validating. And once I knew that I could talk about it and that other people experience it, it reduced my symptoms of anxiety so significantly because I no longer thought something was wrong with me. I understood why we have this anxiety. And what I had told you was, if you look at it from an evolutionary perspective, is that, you know, we as humans used to not have all the protective mechanisms that we have built in our society today. You know, we give birth in a hospital with medical facilities or a birthing center or at home with a midwife that's trained and you have close access to a hospital. We bring our babies home. Well, most people bring their babies home to some type of shelter. They have a nice nursery. They have a safe bassinet. They have swaddles. And so we have all these protective mechanisms built in place. But hundreds of years ago, we didn't have that. And so we we were having babies in caves or out in the bush. And we actually, our anxiety had to be at an all-time high to protect our baby because these it's an instinct to protect our baby. But now in modern society, we don't have much to protect our baby from. But that instinct is still built into us. So we kind of, our mind tricks us to make up things to protect our baby.
Yeah. In some ways, I feel like we have to protect ourselves as parents because the level of expectations, I don't know if I felt this as much. I went into this hole where I was not on social media at all, really until I started working again. And I didn't watch television. I just got, I went into this like deep presence pocket that, I will say that I felt like I needed more information around transitions. I needed more information around her health that really wasn't accessible unless like I called my pediatrician, which I thankfully have one of my close friends from high school as a pediatrician. So that I started texting her. Because I'm like, okay, where do I get information that's reliable and legitimate? But I think that, you know, babies are more, are very protected for the most part. Of course, you know, you look at the circumstance in Ukraine and all over the world where babies are not, or different, you know, socioeconomic, you know, populations don't have the same level of safety. So we have to acknowledge all of that, but let's just, for the sake of this conversation, say that for the, a lot of people at least have minimal, protective mechanisms around their baby. But for women and men and partners having babies, it's really challenging to protect yourself and your mind from expectations that are so heavy around what you should or shouldn't be doing, what you should or shouldn't purchase. I mean, people buy so much stuff. And there's so much stuff around the care of a baby. And also there's, I think, another piece that I know it's so innocent, but the way that we measure success of a baby is how long they sleep at night. And then there's this conversation of sleep training, which I'm not even going to start to talk about my opinion on that. But, you know, that there's so much that we deal with mentally that's beyond just the safety of our baby. That as a society, as a group of people, as a community, we have to start to pull apart and stand for a different narrative. That's really like my goal in these conversations is what kind of narrative do we as mothers and parents and partners want to stand for that actually makes parenthood, motherhood, a journey, a transition that is safe for us to embark on? Because it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. Like we do have all of the baby gear, the the snoo, the all these things to keep our baby safe, but we don't acknowledge the caretakers of the baby and how to keep them safe. And, you know, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders are the number one pregnancy complication. And I don't think many people know that.
Right. In what way? Like, yeah, like that's like before the baby's born or after? Just like, what do you mean
before,
by that?
Before, yeah. It's the number one diagnosed pregnancy complication. Before, during pregnancy. But so if somebody has gestational diabetes, the doctors have a treatment plan for them.
Right.
If somebody is diagnosed with depression or anxiety during pregnancy, they're usually handed a business card or a resource list, and it's nothing is ever followed up on. So
yeah.
If we can't protect parents' minds, how can we, you know, protect their bodies? How can we protect our babies?
I mean, that's, you know, everybody talks about the we need to revolutionize the 6-week visit, you know, and I say there's actually some new legislation coming out, but the 6-week visit, you know, I think my doctor's office is incredible. Like I only sing their praises, but my 6-week visit was like, so do you have the blues? I'm like, the blues, that's the extent of our conversation. Like what? Or even just like, sorry, we'll say it like, well, sex. Okay. You can have sex with your partner. Well, okay. Well, what is it supposed to feel like? Is it normal? Does it hurt? Like, there's no information that's really given to us around not just the health of our own minds and our own bodies, but the health of our partnerships and how we facilitate good partnerships through this time. You know, my mechanism personally was to schedule. I see my therapist, who I used to see all the time. I told her, you know, when I'm in my postpartum phase, I'm going to schedule a session with you each week, even if I don't feel like I need it.
Yeah.
Because I know that I need it, even if I don't feel like I need it, to help facilitate this big transition of not just our bodies. I mean, just the body change is so crazy. And what you were saying, like learning to breastfeed or not breastfeed or a lot of other things go with that. But our identity shift of, you know, how do we balance everything and still, you know, feel like we're doing a good enough job?
Yeah. And I mean, that is so great that you had an established therapist before you had the baby that you trusted, that you intuitively knew I need to do this and set those appointments up. And how can we get that put in place for the majority of women or men who are postpartum? And men get left out of this conversation a lot too, because men experience postpartum depression as well. The statistic is that 1 in 10 men experience postpartum depression.
And they have as much, I mean, my husband and I were just talking about this yesterday, like Adam, they have as much pressure on them as we do on us. It's just totally different pressure, you know? And so men cope with it, or partners cope with it in different ways. So if you weren't the birthing parent and you have a partner and the partner isn't the birthing parent. And I, again, I don't know what being an adoptive parent or a surrogate parent's like, so,
adoptive and surrogate parents and LGBT parents actually have a higher risk of developing perinatal mood. Yeah, they do because it's a very different transition.
Yeah. And that's a whole other, I hope that we, you know, can do an episode on that as well. Cause I think that that's a really, really important topic right now.
Yeah. I would love to speak on that as well.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, since you are 13 weeks into your journey of parenthood and you're kind of in the thick of it, what has your postpartum journey been like, specifically mental health-wise?
You know, I think I definitely had a lot of anxiety. Like anxiety, there's two things, you know, in a lot of the teachings we do, philosophically, we use the word, and like this is joyful and it's overwhelming. you know, yeah. this is amazing and the best experience of my life. And I want to run down the street terrified.
Yeah.
Like, and so this transition is such an and experience. It really is. I think that people say that I'm much calmer, which is really funny because I don't know if it's true or not true. I think I've enjoyed this so much more than I expected, which has been so exciting. And I kept saying, like, I want to experience my joy, but I also have this low level, an underneath. It's not a low level. It's a subtle level of high anxiety all the time. And yeah. I was describing to one of my close friends who doesn't have a baby, you know, the reason I need help during the day is not because I can't do it. It's not because I can't change her diaper and nap with her when she naps. And there is a new level of emotional responsibility that I can't hold 24 hours a day. And so when my mother-in-law or my mom or my friends come over or whoever in the community from Citizen comes over and they hold her, they share the burden with me for that 30 to 40 minutes that I'm not used to. And that gave me a lot of help. That was the help that I think I didn't know I needed. And I still need it. The other surprise piece that I was really shocked is how afraid I was putting her to sleep. And I know that people talk about that, but it was exceptionally difficult. I'm really grateful I had some people to help me. That was one of my requests. Before I got pregnant, I told my husband, I want somebody to help us at night for a few days to help me learn how to do this. Cause I myself have, you know, I was a preemie and I have a lot of fear, an inherent fear of safety.
Yeah.
And so I can tell I'm projecting it a little bit on her. And my husband had said to me one night, I was crying when I let her go into the other room. And Adam said, you know, this is healthy for her. Our whole parenting journey is a journey of letting go. And we start it now. And I remember like he was like hugging me and I was crying and I was so sad to let her go into another room. Like that's, you know, it's like, I'm like even crying right now. I'm like, oh my God, I had to let her go in another room. But if you would have told me that, not postpartum, I would have been like, that's crazy. Put her in the other room. It's fine.
Well, if you think about it, she was inside of you for almost a year. And so, I mean, that is a huge transition, but probably a healthy choice for you.
Totally. She sleeps in a crib extremely well. And I'm really, really grateful that somebody pushed me into that. Now, there's other sleep things that I sort of mentioned that I don't want to get into, but I do want one day to get into. And the other thing that I would say, and this is, you know, we're working to launch a company that we don't really talk about publicly yet.
Yeah.
But one of the parts of my postpartum that was so lovely is how much community support I felt and how essential having women around you during this period of time, or people around you during this period of time who've been through this experience and are just there to sit with you. They don't even have to help me. Just them like bringing me a coffee in the morning, texting me all the time, coming to my house, you know, and again, everybody has their own experience. I'm just a very community oriented person. Yeah. I just really believe that the transition to motherhood needs to be done in a community format and not isolated in your home.
Yeah. And so much of that has been lost in the last couple of years. And I think we kind of touched on that before we started recording. And I'm so happy that you didn't have Penelope
during
the height of the pandemic where you couldn't have that community. And I
can't imagine.
Yeah. So I actually had the experience. I had my second child at the beginning of COVID. And it's so funny because I had all these mechanisms put into place that were then lost. But I had to develop a community within my own household. And I took some of the tools that I had and, you know, was able to cope with it. But at this point, I had worked so hard on building those tools before I had my second child that I had those coping mechanisms in place to, you know, not suffer as much. But there's so many women who had their first child, or even, I mean, it doesn't matter what child, during the pandemic that didn't have those tools. And I am seeing now some of that community recovering now that all these restrictions have been dropped, but I still am sensing a lack of community that needs to recover from this last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great. I know some of the people we know in our community also had babies in during the pandemic, and how difficult that experience would be. I mean, I can't say just for first time parents, but I can just say from my first time experience, if I didn't have the help of my family and couldn't, I probably would have just said, come and live in my house, you know, because I don't think I could have done it myself. You know, I would like call my mom at night and like cry to her about her getting older, or cry about things that I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, having her teach me how to bathe her. And, you know, there's just so many amazing things to have people around you. And there will be a whole population of people that hopefully like can share the wisdom and maybe get stronger. I don't know if you felt like this, like, do you feel more sure, I guess, that we do this in groups versus we do this alone? Or did you feel as though your experience, you felt very confident, like I could do this again alone?
I would prefer not to. Is just me, because I know I need that support. I know I need my family and friends. And what I recommend every couple to do, and a lot of couples usually do it, do this with their second child, is, you know, we all have, I'm sure that you had a birth plan with Penelope, and it sounds like you had somewhat of a postpartum. No.
I didn't really have a birth plan. So this is like where I'm weird. I had no birth expectations. Okay. I had a very in-depth postpartum plan. I am like the weird one that was like, oh, I'm only going to plan my postpartum. I had an amazing birth, but I did not plan my birth. I had no expectations around what was going to happen. I could just hope that I would make it.
That's actually in my work. What I recommend is to write your birth plan in pencil, because like you said, you never know what's going to happen. And then, you know, if you have these expectations, a lot of women struggle a lot after if those aren't met. So if you're able to erase that birth plan and rewrite it, then that's the best way to cope with, you know, what happened to you, because you know, it could either be an amazing birth or a very traumatic birth or somewhere in between. But you took my advice before I gave it. But I recommend, instead of focusing so much on the birth plan, is to focus on a postpartum plan. And like you mentioned, I knew I wanted someone there at night. Like for some reason, that seems to be a taboo subject among women, like, oh, I'm not good enough. I can't handle my baby at night. Like what? Like a shameful thing. And I 100% encourage it. I'm like, if you can hire a postpartum doula, if you don't have family in the area, or if you can get your mom to come stay with you for 2 weeks, because hey, if you get you get induced and you have a 60-hour labor and you don't sleep for 3 days and then you're in the hospital and we all know you don't sleep there, that's 4 or 5 days without sleep. Right. How are you supposed to function?
Right. That's so interesting. You know, I forgot about this, and I appreciate that you just said this. You know, when I had the person stay with us at night who I loved, I would cry because I felt like I wasn't doing a good enough job. Like I would say that to Adam, like, oh my God, I can't believe I have somebody here. So I didn't even enjoy it truthfully, because I felt that sort of like collective shame of I'm not doing a good enough job. Over time, I got over it. But yeah. I did feel that same pressure, exactly what you're saying, that like, and nobody was telling me that. I mean, some of my friends would say like, oh, I don't want to miss that time.
Yeah.
But I think that was so helpful for Penelope, because it gave her, this is just my experience, of course. But it gave her, you know, a good start. If I fed on demand, so I would recommend that to people, please do that. Please don't sleep train your child at 2 weeks. But I think it's really, really such an interesting conversation, Annie, to talk about the guilt. I felt it, and I didn't even have it before. I felt it like, oh my God, I'm not doing a good enough job. But I love that you prescribe it, because it really does make it a question more about our mental health. And if you don't have the resources, my mom stayed overnight. My mom did an amazing job. She slept in a mattress in her floor. You know, again, what you're saying is it doesn't have to be hired help. Like, call your friends, ask your friends to come sleep. You know, it doesn't just have to be somebody that you hire. Like, find people that in your life that want to help you.
Yeah. And there's more people than, you know, willing to do it. Like one of my good friends is about to have her third baby. And I was like, send your other two over for a weekend after. I'll take care of them all weekend. Like,
right?
There's just like so many ways to ask for help. And I think what stops us from asking is the shame and guilt attached to it. Like this pressure that we have as parents, like, we should be able to take care of our other two children while I'm postpartum and have a newborn baby at home. No, you shouldn't. We used to live in communities where you know, in villages, after you gave birth, your children would just go to the neighbor's house and run around the village all day. And other people's families would take care of them. And, you know, our society is not set up like that anymore. And I know that with your new business, you're trying to bridge that gap a little bit and do that. But we need more support for men and women like that in the postpartum period. And we need to not feel shameful for utilizing it.
Yeah, for sure. I thank you for saying that. I forget a lot of the idiosyncrasies of my postpartum experience, and I really appreciate that you mentioned that, because it is intense.
Yeah, and just like you said, that's why it's so great to engage in therapy and not be ashamed to do that in the postpartum period, because like you just said, just having these conversations helps you reflect on your experience and say, hey, during that time, I thought I was doing something wrong, but actually I was being a great mom and setting us up for success.
Yeah. Is there any sort of people listening who are about to have a baby, or, you know, maybe those who had babies feel more validated by listening to this experience? Are there any like final reflections that you want to share, or moments, like suggestions? I think you had mentioned postpartum plan booklet was called. Maybe you can tell people where that is located, or.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure it was, I mean, you can make your own postpartum plan just on a piece of paper, but there is a guide. It's called, it's another perinatal mental health professional wrote it. It's called Build Your Nest. You can order it on Amazon, and it just kind of guides you through the postpartum plan and helps you think of things that you probably would have never thought of.
Yeah.
And so I would recommend getting that. Reach out to a therapist. If you feel that you could potentially struggle during the postpartum period, establish yourself with someone before you have the baby. And that way you have someone there to reach out, like you did. You have someone there to reach out to after the baby's born.
I think that's a really important piece that I would say is preparation. That's one of our the values of the company we're going to be launching. And preparation is so, so, so important. I couldn't even, like, I remember Adam saying to me, like, why haven't you met with your therapist? who's the best therapist on the planet, and I love her so much. Her name is Elisa Bayer. I'll always share her contact with anybody who wants it, because she's helped me immensely in my life.
Good. So glad you found someone.
That... Yeah. You know, each person has to find their person.
Yeah.
And I'll have you share your contact, because I think that's important. But even like me, I planned it, and Adam kept saying to me, like, why aren't you going? And I remember, like, I had skipped 2 weeks, and he pushed me. He was like, please go. Please go. You know, because you can't think clear. You just, there's too much going on in our minds, in our hearts. And, you know, when you go through such hormonal changes, which I've gone through so many times in my life, because I had some hormone disorders in my young 20s, you know, it's, your thoughts aren't real, but they're so real. So you have to treat them as real thoughts. Like, even though I knew logically I was going through a hormonal change, it's still real feelings and still real thoughts, even though logically, you know, that maybe there's a little, maybe they're a little exaggerated. Yeah. So just, I hope that people remember that, that they have to pre-plan their postpartum time, because you think you'll have it all together and you might not.
Yeah. And going back to those, how everything seems amplified during the postpartum period, that is highly linked to the hormonal changes and sleep deprivation. Right. Have a plan for sleep. Sleep immensely affects your mood.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a double-edged sword in this field, because I lay it out there. You have to sleep, and you're not a bad mother for doing it.
Yep.
You have to work with your partner and the resources that you have to figure out how you can sleep.
Mm. Great.
Yeah. So that,
well, Annie, thank you. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that would be like my number one piece of advice to start off with.
Yes. No, yeah. I agree. I thank you so much. How can people reach you? What's your website, and anything else you want to share with them?
My partner Priya and I, we're called Healing Home Counseling Group, and we're located in Bloomfield or Bingham Farms. It's Bloomfield or Bingham Farms. It's between 13 and 14 Telegraph. We're doing in-person and virtual appointments. We are both currently full. Our caseloads are full, but we're trying to hire some people. But even if you need therapy, you want therapy services, I am part of a network of many perinatal therapists in Michigan. So I can help you find someone, even if I don't have room in my caseload. So it's healinghomegroup.com. And we have an Instagram, Healing Home Counseling Group. Just reach out if you need anything, if you need resources. I will always respond, even if I don't have room in my schedule.
Great. Well, Annie, thank you so much for being here. And I hope we have many more conversations and touch on other topics that we sort of skimmed over. But we'll get there.
So yeah, I do too. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be a part of this conversation today.